Today's show is sponsored by Miracle Made. And oh my God, you guys, you know that I love a luxurious set of sheets. And I now have such a set of sheets because of a Miracle Made. They are bedding that has been inspired by NASA. They've got silver-infused fabrics that actually make temperature regulating a thing. So you're not like getting too hot or too cold or whatever, you know, the whole thing that happens with your body's temperature losing its mind. Miracle Made helps with that. One of the little things that my husband particularly loves about Miracle Made is that it like doesn't have as much bacteria as regular sheets because of it's infused with this silver that prevents up to 99.7% of bacterial growth. So it leaves the sheets cleaner for longer. And then the thing for my husband is that it doesn't give him acne, which is like an issue for some people. But more than all of that, it's just luxuriously comfortable and delightful. And it has that cooling feeling while also being cozy. Very hard to achieve those two things at the same time. I mean, Miracle Made, come on, well done. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and buy some sheets today. And if you order today, you can save 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION at the checkout and you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. So there's just a lot of savings here, folks. Order today, you'll get 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION. Go to trymiracle.com/FAKETHENATION. And Miracle's so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you're not 100% satisfied, which I don't see happening, you'll get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and use the code FAKETHENATION to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/fakethenation to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode.
Fake the Nation, episode 218.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about politics, and where we add a little kale to the banana strawberry smoothie of democracy, because freedom is sweet, but with a little kale, it's also healthy. Am I being so insightful right now? I really feel like I am. I'm like the Keith Raniere of the podcast world, just dropping wisdom. Does that reference make sense to anyone? Is anyone yes. watching The Vow? Okay, because yes. I just can't stop talking about Keith Raniere. This week, such a ridiculous person. All right, folks, we're going to talk about gut-wrenching fires on the West Coast. We're also going to talk about all the people who pretend to be people of color but aren't actually people of color. It's a trend. And we're going to talk about elections. Today's panel, it was just exquisitely created for this very moment in our lives. I can't tell you how excited I am about today's panel. We have with us, he's returning to the show. We love him so very much. He's host of the podcast Today Explain on Vox, which you should immediately subscribe to. He's so smart and fantastic and great and delightful. And he is Sean Ramos-Varam. Hey, Sean.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
And joining us today, folks, this one's a biggie for me because I like look up to this woman, listen to all of her specials and albums, and have just enjoyed her for a very long time. She's an actor. She's a comedian, obviously comedian, musician, and she's actually hosting the Folsom Street Fair, which is the largest BDSM event in the world that's coming to an internet near you very soon because it's online this year. It is the one, the only, the incomparable Margaret Cho. Hey, Margaret.
Hey, thank you. Hi.
Oh, you guys, so excited to have you both on the show today. Let's just jump in with topic number one.
Before we jump, can I ask when the BDSM event is so I can attend?
It's on Sunday. It's on Sunday. You got to come. It's great. I'm actually really excited.
That sounds
because,
awesome.
You know, we can't not have it. So we got to have it somehow. So we're going to have it on Sunday.
So
it's usually on Folsom Street, but now we're going
to
have it on
Sunday. I've never
been
to an online BDSM event, so I'm very excited.
It's going to be great. It's going to be amazing.
I've only accidentally been to a BDSM event in Berlin. Yeah, it was at a club in Berlin. And I walked in just like wearing an outfit. And like a regular, like an I go to libraries outfit. And they said, you have to take your shirt off. They were like, you don't really fit in if you should take your shirt off. They were very German. Oh. They wanted like some sort of like BDSM uniformity. So anyways, that event didn't quite work out for me. The bra was ugly. You know, I don't want to an ugly bra. You know, I had to prepare for that moment.
Yeah.
Sure. All right. Let us move into topic number one. The West Coast is on fire, but in a bad way. It started with a big fire in Northern California. Then there were a few fires in Southern California. Then there were huge fires in Oregon and even Washington State. And to go that far north seemed like the fire was really trying to prove a point. And millions of acres are at stake. People have died. My friends and family on the West Coast keep taking pictures of the really shitty air they have to breathe. Thousands have been evacuated. It's just really sad and scary. And I wanted to ask you, Margaret, I think you're on the West Coast. What has it been like?
It's terrible. I'm actually very close to the Bobcat Fire, which so I'm right at the line of so the evacuations happen about one town over from where I live. And so it's really awful. The air quality it's always really bad anyway in Southern California, but now we have this extra layer of terrible stuff. What is so infuriating to add to this is the incredible amount of climate change denial that people have around this situation and the idea that this fire was possibly started by Antifa. That's the most ridiculous thing. That's not so much here. That's more in Oregon, that the sort of conspiracy theory. Conspiracy theory used to be kind of cool. I mean, when I was a young anarchist in the 80s, conspiracy theory was not a terrible thing. But now I think it was, I'm not sure exactly when it turned, but it really turned in a very bad way. And now it's just a shameful thing to be involved in conspiracies.
It used to just be like Kennedy and the moon, and now it's just everything.
Right. And they're actually sending out groups of vigilantes to look for Antifa that doesn't exist, and it's oh my god, it's just you know, it feels dangerous and also a waste of everybody's time. And the most I think frustrating climate denier, I don't know if you feel the same way, the two of you, but I think that our president is the most frustrating of the climate deniers because he also has some sort of power, and he said this week, he said, it'll start getting cooler. You just watch. And he also said to ignore the science. And he's been blaming poor forest management. Sean, what do you think of his claims?
I mean, it feels like what's new here isn't the president's climate science denial. It isn't the fact that he's happy to stick his head in the sand and ignore all of this. What's new is that this is a crisis coupled on a crisis, coupled on a crisis, coupled on a crisis. And I truly hope that people are getting fed up. I truly hope that
a crisis layer cake.
That this is a tipping point. I mean, this shouldn't be political. This is people losing their homes, poor people, rich people. This is people evacuating cities. This is significant amounts of California burning down, 10% of Oregon being ordered or asked to evacuate. Like, this is just an emergency. It's a climate emergency. It's an emergency. And like so many others, I just hope the fact that we have, I don't know, a person in charge who doesn't seem to care, I hope that era might come to an end sometime soon.
I hope so. Yeah. This is a very big deal, too, for science in that we're possibly losing the Mount Wilson Observatory, which is where the fire is right now. And it's where most of the big seismic equipment is, where we detect earthquakes for California. So this is a very, very important center. You know, it's made sort of seismic predictions for the last 100 years. There's like over $1 billion of seismic equipment there. There's been a lot of great developments that have come from that particular observatory that I think people don't even recognize the importance of it. But it's more than that. It's just a historical place that is very valuable. You know, in addition to the fact that this whole forest there is a wildlife sanctuary, and it's just a very, it's a depressing situation of what's going on.
Can I tell you guys, I learned two things reading about all of this. One is that I really want to write the word forest with two R's. Like, it's just inside my soul to do it with two R's. And that's not how it's written. So that's, everyone should know. The second thing I learned is that when reading about this, a lot of the wildfire authorities, you know, in California and on the West Coast in general have pointed out there is an element of forest management that is involved. So it's not, it's what's frustrating is that if we're able to talk about this with any nuance, which we've abandoned nuance so long ago, but if we were able to, we could say, yes, some of the problem is there's a large number of dead trees that are standing in parts of the state because of drought and disease, and they need to be dealt with. There's, you know, there's the modern practice of total fire suppression is sometimes at odds with the older practice of letting limited fires burn and break so that to get rid of some of the brush and create breaks. So that stuff is also, you know, that stuff is true, but it's all of it, all of the scientists agree that it's being totally and ridiculously exacerbated by climate change, right? And the other hilarious thing I learned is that a lot of the fires are actually federal land. So when Donnie is out there blaming California, he's actually looking at himself, because a lot of these fires are federal land. So I thought that was really interesting.
He should have done, I mean, he should have done so many things. One thing that was, I think, positive this week that happened was that Gavin Newsom, who I am a fan of, he signed a bill that would allow inmates, California inmates who are already out there fighting fires, to now, when they are released from prison, to be allowed to apply for jobs as firefighters, which I think is really important. I think this is a really great step in this idea that, you know, we can actually look towards prison as more of rehabilitative experience. And I think this is what prison is for anyway. And that's what we should be doing for people incarcerated. And, you know, they're out there risking their lives. They're human beings. And it's really important that they're receiving education in there. And this is a really, I think, you know, we're asking them to do something that's very dangerous. We should be like giving them a livelihood when they come out. And this is amazing training. They do get some level of training before they go out to fight these fires. But, you know, I think this is a great program. So I'm hoping that this actually becomes a very successful thing.
God, I love that, because obviously we're going to need to develop the fire fighting forces on the West Coast in general. We're going to have to treat it a little, you know, differently and more seriously than we have been. I grew up in Palm Springs, California, like most comedians. And when I was in Palm Springs, we had you know, a fire season, and I don't know if this was your experience in your early days in the West Coast, Margaret, but like we had a fire season that was short. I want to say it was like 2 weeks or something, and it was like cute. You know what I mean? It was like, mm-hmm. I remember seeing a fire from my parents' backyard on the mountain and be like, oh my God, cute. Like it was sort of like not a big deal. And then they dealt with it very quickly. And it like, it just didn't become as big a deal. I don't remember ever having to deal with it, but the current state of affairs is very stressful. Sean, do you have any thoughts on what should have happened versus what is happening?
I mean, I think with the stress, we just did this episode on the fires, and we spoke to a firefighter who's been out there in the mountains fighting the Fork Fire in California. And then we spoke to this person who actually designs apps to deal with the stress and trauma of things like wildfires and even COVID and the layering of the wildfires on the COVID and everything else. Mm. She's with the National Center for PTSD. Her name was Dr. Beth Jaworski. And I think something that is important to remember is the climate denial and the was this or was this not Antifa, that stuff is oftentimes, though important, can drown out the reality. And I just think
yes,
we need to I don't think firefighters on the ground are sitting there being like, was this Antifa or not? They're just fucking trying to save lives and homes and people, you know? And I think it's important to manage the stress of this very difficult time appropriately. And man, if I thought too much about the fact that people want to blame Antifa for what's going on right now, I don't know if I could sleep. So I would just encourage people to focus on the fact that most people seem to understand what's really going on here and accept that this is climate related.
Yeah, no, I also give you guys just like a little moment of comedy that I read throughout this whole thing, which is that on the horrible Antifa rumors, one of these groups of armed men that have been like patrolling the streets or whatever of Oregon stopped an Oregon public broadcasting reporter because they thought he was starting fires, which just made me laugh that they think like people who work for NPR are just running around like just setting up fires. And I also want to point out Anna Maria in Seattle, one of our listeners wrote she just wanted me to bring to everyone's attention that, you know, that they're struggling to breathe in Seattle, but migrant farm workers across Washington State and the West Coast are still working outdoors through the pandemic and through these fires. And they deserve our protection, advocacy, and support. So if you're feeling antsy and you want to make a call to your local reps, I feel like what is happening with migrant workers is a really good, and farm workers is a really great place to start because honestly, that hadn't occurred to me, but there's a lot of jobs that are like kind of very, very close or were directly within harm's way. And they're just forced to breathe the air because capitalism.
Yeah.
I want to just ask you quickly, like, this is something that came up last night and I didn't have enough time to read it, but there's a whistleblower complaint that there are forced hysterectomies happening at an ICE facility in Georgia. And I know we did that wasn't a topic that I asked you folks to look at. I don't know, Margaret, I mean, again, we know so very little right now because they're going to do an investigation probably. Margaret, I imagine you're not into eugenics.
I totally believe it. And I mean, you know that's happening. You know that's happening. And you know that it's absolutely, you know, our country has a history of this kind of stuff. And it no surprise to me that that's happening. I mean, who knows what happens in these ICE detention facilities. It's just, I mean, they're concentration camps.
Yeah.
It's like not any different. It's not any, I don't understand like why they exist. We have to abolish ICE. It's a very disgusting thing. I mean, I'm already getting ready to argue with the pro-lifers on this. I mean, like, I just can't imagine what pro-lifers are going to have to say about, they're going to have some answer ready-made to argue with me on this because I don't know why they're just like, it's just such a crazy thing, but I absolutely believe this is happening. I think it's horrible. It's disgusting. And yeah, I heard it and I'm like, of course that's happening. And of course it's so good that it's come out, you know, we know.
Yeah, I mean, I am just like on pins and needles about what the further reporting is going to be of this story and the investigations that Nancy Pelosi has called for. So like, I don't know, Jesus Christ. We'll talk about it when we know more. I just want to let people know it's something that's happened and I don't know what to say except for I'm traumatized just at the news and Jesus Christ. All right, you know what we're going to do, folks? We're going to take a quick break and when we come back, we'll talk about other things.
T
Today's show is sponsored by Prose. This is kind of, I feel like, you know, I'm on some sort of Lord of the Rings journey trying to figure out skincare. And I feel like this customized skincare line is really got my name on it. Basically, every bottle of Prose custom hair care and skincare, I tried the skincare just recently, is made to order and it's personalized. It's got a unique blend of naturally powerful and proven effective ingredients to meet your needs, like specifically you. And then the way they do it is you take this great, like in-depth quiz, basically. They analyze over 80 factors for a complete view of your life, your beauty goals. Like I have oily skin that's also dry, which is just a fun little conundrum. I live in New York City. Like we've got these four seasons. My face gets weird during seasonal shifts. All of these things I got to kind of talk about in answering the questions. The other fun thing was they asked us at the end, like, do you like a creamy type of moisturizer or like a less creamy kind? And I was kind of like, I think like less creamy. And they were like, that's fine. Like you can do that, but we think for your skin type, creamier is better. And I never knew that. So I love that there's so much kind of personal information that goes into creating this. I got my stuff in the mail very quickly after. I got a wonderful serum. Like I said, this very creamy moisturizer. And this also very just delectably creamy cleanser that just kind of feel like I think it's possible that I've been washing my face with just like harshness. Like many years, because when I saw this cleanser, I was like, oh, is this what it's supposed to feel like? It's supposed to feel like a little bit of a delight on my face. That's not what I've been doing. So I don't know, guys. And here's the thing, you don't have to take my word for it. In a third party, double blind, dermatologist supervised controlled clinical study, which is like the gold standard for research studies, Prose prove that personalization works better than off the shelf alternatives, which just sort of totally makes sense on a just logical level. If you think about it, just it makes common sense. Prose is so confident that you'll love your results that they're offering my listeners an exclusive trial offer so you can see the difference custom care can make. 50% of your first subscription order at prose.com/fakethenation will be taken off. That's Prose.com/fakethenation. You get your free consultation and 50% off your one-of-a-kind formulas. Again, that's prose.com/fakethenation. Go and get your just super personalized, luxurious skincare products and hair care products. That's what I'm going to try next. So prose.com/fakethenation. I am the type of person that has subscribed to things and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app, and I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until that is, I discovered Rocket Money, and because I use Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry, thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you, so you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a roundabout 8 exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket Money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing? Losing that money. I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels
unwanted subscriptions, it monitors your spending, it helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Folks, I feel like I've mentioned this before, but I tried other services that I was displeased with. And then a neighbor of mine was trying Factor. I had pulled them aside in the hallway and I was like, what are you feeling about this Factor? And they were like, it is delicious. You should definitely do it. So then me and my husband did it and we loved it. They are chef-prepared meals that arrive to your door, and then in 2 minutes, you could be eating them. Like, it's so simple, and they're actually delicious. And for people like me who just sometimes, my schedule can be so maniacal between traveling in different cities and, you know, doing stand-up gigs. It's like I just don't have a typical schedule where I can plan, set aside time for cooking and all that stuff. So something like Factor really helps for me. The other thing that I love to do is try not to eat carbs. So they have a keto option, which is fantastic. It's super delicious. They use premium ingredients. You can get stuff with like filet mignon and shrimp and truffle butter and broccolini and asparagus, right? Like real ingredients. They're no fuss, no mess meals. They eliminate the hassle of having to prep. They're tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with flexibility. You can pause or reschedule. I've actually done that. I've both paused and rescheduled. Factor is basically your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long, and look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should head to factormeals.com/fakethenation50 and use the code fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code fakethenation50 at factormeals.com/fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Let us move on to topic number two. Before we move on to topic number two, I just want to let everybody know that I'm going to be doing a quick little Instagram live chat on Friday at 1 p.m. Eastern with veteran panelist John F. O'Donnell. We're just going to try and hit up some news that we didn't have enough time to deal with on this episode. So again, that's 1 p.m. on Friday, and it would be great if you joined us. It'll be a little Instagram live chat. All right, now for topic number two. Jessica Krug was a history professor at George Washington University who pretended to be black for many, many years. She wrote a Medium piece that is an apology for what she's done, titled The Truth and the Anti-Black Violence of My Lies. She was, in fact, a white Jewish person from suburban Kansas City, but it turns claimed to have had roots in North African blackness, then U.S.-rooted blackness, then Caribbean-rooted Bronx blackness. She says, quote, I have not only claimed these identities as my own when I had absolutely no right to do so, when doing so is the very epitome of violence, of thievery and appropriation of the myriad ways in which non-black people continue to use and abuse black identities and cultures. It goes on and on in that vein. This is one of the most mea culpiest mea culpas I've ever read. And yet the scenario is still so bizarre. Margaret, what did you make of her apology?
It's so weird to me. It's like, well, it's just like a Rachel Dolezal effect of like, you know, she was probably shitting a brick when I wonder what she had said about Rachel Dolezal.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder what, whatever there was, like, sort of social media sort of footprint of things that she may have said about that when that all went down.
That's a really good question. I didn't look it up. Yeah, I have no idea. Oh, my God.
I wonder if she was disappointed, like, if she was doing all of this so she could one day admit she was doing all of this. And then when she found out someone else was doing this, she was like, fuck, I got to wait, like, 2 years now.
But this was a beautifully penned apology. So I'm not surprised if it was not a part of, like, you know, a radical performance art piece that also involved deep, you know, colonial racism.
Yeah, it's such a, I think it's all because of that. Is it that C. Thomas Howell movie, Soul Man? Do you ever see that? It's like a really old movie.
Where he is in blackface, no?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, he tries to pass or something.
Yeah,
I never saw it. I've just seen clips. Yeah.
That kind of thing. But it's like, I mean, she wasn't in blackface. It was almost like a sort of an academic under the guise of.
Right.
And then nobody's going to question if you tell people. It's that sort of like a perceived blackness that she was, I don't know, like she was just trying to say, like, and then you're like, what is race anyway? It's almost like it's the moot point of like, what does race even mean?
I mean, so Sean, do you think, I know. It's interesting because what does race even mean? Sean, what does race even mean?
I mean, I can't get away from it.
You know, Nagin, race, you know, I remember reading The Human Stain as like a teenager and being like, this book's like a joke. Who could ever pass for like a totally different race? And then this stuff happens and I'm like, wow, people could totally pass as a totally different race. And then you look at photos of her and you're like, maybe? I don't know. I guess we're so afraid to question people's identity that if she walks into a room and says, I'm African-American, everyone's like, okay, you're African-American. But I guess people are going to doubt people's racial identity more and more as a result of these incidents.
First of all, I mean, I wonder if during the whole Ralph Northam stuff, she was just like, oh, he's doing it wrong. How unsuccessful a way of doing
Ralph,
it.
Ralph, call me.
Call me. I have a way of doing it that involves no makeup. But I think what's interesting about passing as someone, so that none of us are black. Am I correct that none of us are black?
No, not yet, but
also none of us are white. But I am extremely ethnically ambiguous, and so I have gotten every imaginable ethnicity ascribed to me because people can't figure out this face. And so I think that, yeah, I think it would be sort of easy for someone like me to run around and pretend a bunch, which is why I have an announcement to make. I've been saying that I'm an Iranian-American Muslim, but in fact, my name is Sarah. No, but it's like so possible. I think what are the things going on in your mind? I mean, there's a little bit of a thing that I maybe kind of understand, which is the Don Draper element of this, which is she wanted to kill her former self and live a completely different self because of past trauma or whatever.
And she clearly seems to like love the thing that she wanted to be, right? I mean, it's like, it's somewhat comparable to, I don't know, like loving hardcore music and wanting to start a hardcore band, but you're like, you don't know how to scream or something, but you pretend anyway. I think she was just passionate, but took it in the wrong direction. She should just be comfortable celebrating a culture that she, you know, doesn't belong to. There are healthy ways to do that, right?
Well, I think that there's like this thing of like, when you're not white, you know, you're not white. That's it. Then there's like this thing of like, when you're not white, you really belong to not being white. And there's different ways to express that. And, you know, some people sort of metabolize that in different ways. And I think to people who are white and who feel like kind of displaced by that and disappointed by their kind of sameness, and feel like, well, this is so like basic.
Right.
I would rather feel like I really belong to, because when white people belong, it feels like basic and supremacist.
Right. Yeah.
And whereas our feeling of belonging feels like a cultural celebration.
Right.
So I think that sort of like the otherness and othering, it's very attractive to white people. That's why like white people love when they go to a restaurant where there's no other white people. You know, they're like, ooh, you know, they love that experience because they think that they're in the know somehow, or they're accepted as other. And so when you can be accepted as other, there's a kind of intimacy there and a connection and belonging that feels very ripe. And maybe she could never get there because she just felt that she didn't feel that connection with her own. Like, I know that she's sort of not close with her family and sort of gave her that ability to sort of tell her own story as she wanted to, as opposed to as it really was.
You know, she said in this apology, she said, I'm quoting her, I should absolutely be canceled. No, I don't write it in passive voice ever because I believe we must name power. So you should absolutely cancel me, and I absolutely cancel myself. Like I said, the mea culpaist. Does she deserve forgiveness?
I don't know if it's a matter of forgiveness or not, just because I don't consume her work in a way that would either denote forgiveness or not. You know, she's not an artist that I know that it doesn't really matter to me. It's just like an experience of race that I can understand just because I've gone through phases of really wanting to be white.
Sure.
You know, and really wanting to be somebody that I was not. And so I can get behind wanting to be not who I am. So I see that. I can see why somebody would want to do that. And definitely it's a weird way, but it's weird to actually be able to do it. That's the part that I can't get, because I could never pass as white. I could never pass.
Right.
I think that's very relatable. Like when I was in the third grade, I was the only Sri Lankan in my entire school, apart from my brother in Toronto. But there were like a couple of Trinidadian kids, and I could pass as like somehow Trinidadian. So I would say, yeah, my parents are from Trinidad, or like my dad's from Trinidad, my mom's not, just because it made me feel like I belonged a little bit more. I think what's astounding is that, like, probably like you, Margaret, you know, you get over these phases as you like become an adult and grow into yourself and accept your culture. But to be like a professor at George Washington University and still be doing this shit is bananas. So like, can people forgive her? Of course. Is her professional career over? Like, probably, right? I don't know how you get past that. Is like, you know, I built a career on a lie.
Right.
But let's have it continue at some prestigious university, I think.
Right. It's funny because I get, yeah, like you two, I also have that compassion of I grew up, and I write about this in my book, How to Make White People Laugh, that is available for sale wherever fine books are sold, but specifically indie booksellers. And I talk about how, like, growing up, because I grew up in Palm Springs, and the major minority group in Palm Springs was the Mexicans. And because I look ethnically ambiguous, I just sort of, like, longed to be sort of lost in that Mexican crowd.
Yeah.
But it was all, you know, but it was... But I never try. You know, I was never like, hey, ¿dónde está el baño? You know what I mean? I can't even fathom doing it. Like, it just makes me blush even thinking about trying that.
Beto O'Rourke did that on a debate stage like 4 times.
But yeah, like, you know, I it's funny because in the comfort of my own home, like, I may have tried on a donde está el baño, but in high school, like, it was just also in the harsh light of teenagedom, where anything you say can and will be used against you. I mean, what's also almost impressive about this is that she managed to escape all of that for so long. I mean, she's a history professor at George Washington University, who recently resigned. So she had tons of students, tons of faculty. I mean, this woman knew a lot of people. So it's fascinating that it went on for as long as it did.
I saw a tweet. Gene Demby, the host of NPR's Code Switch podcast, posted a tweet where someone had emailed him weeks, months, years ago. I forget which it was, but certainly a while ago, saying, there's this professor at George Washington University. I'm pretty sure she's trying to pass. I'm pretty sure she's just a white person pretending to be a black person. But like, I don't know how to call it out. I don't know if like you guys could investigate this, but I just wanted to flag it. So apparently people knew, people were thinking about it, but it took her very thorough mea culpa to really, I guess, settle the matter. But yeah, I mean, I think it is really relatable, but it's going to be a tough road for her. But I think, you know, that Central Park incident with the birder and the lady with the dog and calling the cops and all that, the Karen incident that got everyone's attention this year, that was like a really interesting, teachable kind of moment because, you know, the guy who got the cops called on him said something like, you know, I don't need to cancel her. Like, the pain that she's going through right now, her experience right now is enough. And, like, I think we should apply that broadly and generously. Like, this person's life has probably been somewhat painful. It's probably been hard to be a fraud for her entire career, you know? And so, like, I hope she finds peace within herself and her true identity and finds a path forward, I suppose.
I mean, do you think it would... Like, do you think that there would be this much media attention if she was trying to be a different race? Like, if she was trying to be Sri Lankan or if she's trying to be
Korean?
I think
people would be like, what's Sri Lanka?
I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I think that if she was trying to be Korean, it would be, I think Koreans would be really excited. Like, Korean people get really excited when, like, white people speak Korean. They, like, put them on TV and they, like, they're, like, all, like, you know, like, they all, like, get you know, like, you know, they, like, want everybody to see. And it's really, like, there's, like, a whole culture of, I guess, Koreaboos. Like, people who love, like, white people who are any other ethnic background who love Korean culture.
Right.
So there's quite a lot of affection for that. We've not at the stage of, like, people questioning sort of, like, anybody who wants to be Korean, we're, like, very excited about it.
Yeah. There is, I will say, less of a cool factor, you know, in being Iranian or something, or like a, you know, there, I don't know, or like a less of a mainstream understanding. Like, no one's like, oh, well, cool. Like, you're Iranian. Like, what's the dancing? Like there's all these posts about her dancing salsa because of her, Bronx, like, you know, Puerto Rican was mixed in Caribbean, Black Caribbean, Puerto Rican, whatever roots.
Oh, it was really dynamic, her false identity.
Yeah, and it involved like a very like high level knowledge of salsa. So
that's work. I mean, she put in the work. You got to give her partial credit.
Some sort of a credit. I mean, though, the interesting thing is like we've all been around people who, you know, I think what happens, like, fetishize, right? We've all been around people who fetishize, which I would have been like, fetishizing, I'm sort of like, go for it. You know what I mean? Mm. Like, I get it. You want to fetishize. You're so into it. Like, I oftentimes think I fetishize the French. Like, I love France and everything, you know, French. And I've mentioned maybe once or twice on this podcast before that I lived in Paris. It's not a big deal. I've just had a really exciting life. And so I
fetishize Iran. I'm actually making scorched rice in my Parse rice cooker right now.
Stop it. Oh my God! You
it's
win
set to high
panelist of the year award. Sean, you didn't say shit about Iran, by the way, this whole time. So you weren't even in the running for panelist
I'm
of the
still,
year.
I'm still really hung up on Trinidad, actually.
All right. right. Well, this was fascinating. Let me know what you folks think. And also, just I want you to send all the effusive congratulations to Margaret for making virgin rice.
So good.
I mean, if she didn't already deserve all the accolades, she certainly does now. Folks, let us move on to topic number three. Let's start with a piece of news. I'm not sure if you know, but we're in the middle of an election. Okay. And there was a piece of election news that I felt was so interesting and encapsulated everything about life, which is that the Scientific American has endorsed Joe Biden. And by the way, they've never endorsed any presidential candidate in their 175-year history. And they've broken that cherry to endorse Joe Biden. You know, and they said something like, the evidence and the science show that Donald Trump has badly damaged the U.S. and its people because he rejects evidence and science, I mean, which is pretty fucking clear. Why, Margaret, why was this notable to me?
it's absolutely so important that Joe Biden win this election, Kamala Harris and Joe Biden win this election. To me, it's Kamala Harris for president. But I think they're
You're
both
not
great.
Alone. You're not alone.
I'm really, she's my candidate. And she has to win. They have to win. we can't take any chances. I'm actually considering going to vote in person, which is sort of kind of a big deal, I think. But I think I have enough PPE to actually, I think I'm going to go first thing in the morning.
Are you going to don like, do you have like the full hazmat? What's your style?
I have the full Naomi Campbell hazmat.
Oh, nice.
And I'm going to go
very glamorous, by the way.
Very glam. And I'm going to just go in with full PPE and just get it done. And get in and get out.
Wait,
but
California has mail-in, right? Can't you mail that puppy in in a couple
weeks?
But
I don't. I'm like really like I'm just not completely.
Oh.
I have the mail-in coming, but I'm kind of like I don't know. I may just physically take the damn thing in or just go in.
Respect.
Yeah,
Nagin, I have a theory on why you noticed this piece of news. I think. Uh-huh. We're all, even the conservatives out there who may have voted for him because Supreme Court judges or abortion or tax cuts, whatever it might have been, we're all a little shell-shocked from the past 4 years. And it's sort of affirming and reassuring, I think, to occasionally hear that, like, hey, someone who's like sat in the Switzerland territory for eternity is getting in the game right now to say, like, this one matters. One for Joe. You know what I mean? Like, I think it sort of confirms that, like, guys, this isn't normal. This is a little insane. And I don't know. My question is, does it matter? Like, I think when you counted up the Hillary Clinton endorsements next to the Donald Trump endorsements from...
It was an avalanche of endorsements.
From newspapers, from whoever, from op-ed boards, from people, from celebrities, from politicians, it was insane. And obviously she won the popular vote.
My dog endorsed Hillary Clinton very strongly on Instagram. The video is still up.
But I think it does count for something to hear from Scientific American that, hey, this thing matters. Well, did I get that right? Scientific American? Sorry.
Yeah, Scientific American.
That from Scientific American that this thing matters and, you know, they care. It's nice to hear that people care.
You know, because maybe they're going to catch... five scientists who haven't already decided, you know, and that I'll take those five votes.
And one's in Wisconsin and one's in Michigan and one's in Pennsylvania and one's in Florida. Maybe one's in Ohio or something, you know, that'd be nice.
Can I run by you folks a spiel here? Because the thing is, we're only doing optimism here on Fake the Nation. And I want to talk about also a little bit of reality, which is that the election may look, I believe the election will go our way. I am optimistic and I'm running myself into the ground as we all are to do things to make sure the fucking election goes our way. However, let's say it doesn't go our way. The feeling I have is that, is it possible for us to not put so much weight into this one office, the office of the presidency. You know what I mean? Is it possible for us to say, okay, again, I'm speaking about an otherworldly event in which we don't have win, but let's say let's say we didn't win this one. It's okay because I am so deeply involved in local politics. And I'm so deeply involved in my senator and my congresspeople and my mayor and my state senators, my state assembly people and my all of that and my fucking community board and my district leaders. Like, is it possible that those things can matter more to us, that we don't put so much of our heart into this one office? What do you think of that as a way to look at it, Margaret? You're smiling at me.
I think it's a good way.
Like I'm a cute little girl.
No, I think that's, I think it's important to think of both. You know, I think it's always important to remember local governments and to build a relationship with the people around. I mean, that's, I'm, you know, a fan of Gavin Newsom and who I followed his journey from mayor of San Francisco and all the way up and through. And so, you know, like now he's governor and that's really a great thing. Like I'm excited about his rise and that I have a lot of faith in what he's done. And so that's good to feel like you're invested in people who care about your state, your city, your state, your, you know, community. So I think that's really valid and a good way to look at it.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people are probably hankering for a month, a week, a day to not think about how politics affects everything in their lives and is ruining everything in their lives. But it's hard to ignore, right, after the past 4 years, just how important this stuff is. And yeah, man, I think you're right that it starts in our backyards. And it's hard because the stakes are so much smaller when on the national level you're seeing climate change, pandemic, sure, immigration, hysterectomies at the border. You know, this stuff's bonkers. It's bananas. It's beyond belief in a lot of cases. And on your local level, it's like trash pickup at Prospect Park in Brooklyn or, you know, zoning stuff right about a grocery store. And it's hard to get as invested. But, man, there's that line in Avengers Infinity War where
I was waiting for you to bring up Avengers Infinity War. Okay,
you know,
here we go.
Where Spider-Man, he sneaks onto the shuttle that's going out into space to, like, fight Thanos or whatever. And Iron Man's like, what the hell are you doing here, man? Like, I told you, you're just a kid. You can't come out here. And he's like, you can't be a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man if there's no neighborhood. So I kind of feel that, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, you just, like, you have to care about what's happening in your backyard. I don't know, more, if not as more, much as you care about what's going on in the White House and what's going on in the Senate races in your respective states, unlike D.C., where we're not a state and don't have senators. Oh, yeah.
Separate issue.
But, give me a pass. I can care more about the White House, but everyone else should care about
everyone
local
else.
Races.
Right. But I think, I mean, Margaret brought up an excellent point about watching Gavin Newsom since he was in Little League, like, become the thing, right? And that's like a great reason to give a shit about local electeds. But also, I'm going to give you an even better reason than sanitation to give a shit about your locals. Because if you think about, for example, the history of car emissions in the United States, it was California. California started to say, oh my God, everything is full of smog. It's heinous. The sunsets are gorgeous, but like the air quality is real bad. Let us make cars that don't emit particles that are going to give us all cancer, right? And so the car manufacturers like, motherfucker, now we got to make better cars. And so they started making better cars and they're not going to do two different standards, right? They're going to follow the California standard, which then makes it the standard for the entire country. California fucking did that. And they did that on a state level because bless them. And it probably started in Los Angeles because the air quality was such garbage. Another example is like cigarette smoke. You know, it used to be you could smoke fucking everywhere, but the New York City banned cigarettes. California actually had some bans in place as well. And New York City was the first big, fat, major, the city where the kind of place where you fucking get wasted and fucking have a bunch of cigarettes right at the bar. And New York City banned cigarettes. And then what did every major city around the world start doing? They started banning cigarettes. So then our numbers for cigarette smoking plummet in New York. People stopped smoking. And it was just an easy local fix that had this kind of huge domino effect on the world, right? So I just want to say, folks, we're only doing optimism, but we're also doing optimism with some fucking evidence, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually also heard there's like this backlash. There's like this backlash to just saying you have to vote all the time. Like voting is the solution out of all of our problems, which I get because people are very disillusioned right now and have voted for the right progressive people of color to run cities and haven't seen the changes that they've been promised. Obviously, that's fair. But I do still think that, like, turnout in this country is at, like, 50-ish percent, like, 60-ish at best in a lot of places. Like, if there was a dramatic investment in voting, I think things could change from local stuff to statewide stuff to national stuff in a way that, you know, a lot of people would like to see right now. So yeah. I would love to see election days, be they, you know, midterm, be they local, be they national, whatever it is. I would love to see holidays on election days. And just so people could.
Oh, agree.
Could not have an excuse. People who have to work 9 to 5, people who are working at grocery stores could just leave, could just wake up in the morning, make breakfast for their kids. It could be fun. We did this episode on our show, which will probably rerun on election day, about voting day in Australia. And it's like a party. There's shrimps on the Barbie. Everyone's hanging out. They go vote, then they go to the beach. And like, we could rethink this in a way that helps everyone participate, you know?
That would be great.
Yes, make it fun.
Make it fun.
More BDSM festivals on election day?
Yes!
What?
Hells yes.
Am I just pumping out some ideas right here?
That's a great idea.
I'm going to tell you guys one more thing, which I thought was really interesting. But the campaign of Joe Biden has assembled a whole bunch of lawyers and former solicitor generals to create the largest ever election protection program in presidential campaign history. Margaret, what do you think?
I think it, you know, great. It's great. I don't know.
They're firing at all cylinders.
They have to. I mean, they have. This is a very serious thing. This whole election is so important. I mean, it really is the most important in my lifetime that I've seen. And they've all been important, but this one really is. And it's just absolutely vital that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris win. I can't even stress enough how important it is.
Yeah, we're going to leave it on that because Margaret Cho just said it. It's really fucking important. All right. And that's all that matters. And have your plans to vote.
And also just be ready for like election week or even election month, because that's the reality we're looking at, right? I mean, I think that's what that signals, is that this is going to be tough and we're preparing for it. And I think the whole country should prepare for it. The president's already gaslighting the country on mail-in ballots, on absentee voting, on whatever else. And he's saying this is going to be a hoax election and that the Democrats are scheming in this way and that, when the reality is he's literally scheming when he says that. So I think people should just be prepared for it to be tough. Take a deep breath on November 2nd, you know, and get ready for it.
Folks, that is the end of the show, and one thing I have to do before we end the show is I like to talk about, races to watch, but instead this week I'm going to talk quickly about voter registration deadlines. So exciting. but I just did a little quick peruse to see what some of the voter registration deadlines are. Like, for example, if you're in Alabama, the deadline is October 19th. If you're in Arizona, you can register. The deadline is October 5th. So I did a little. If you're in Colorado, the voter registration deadline is literally 7 p.m. on election day, because you can do in-person voter services. Registrating, as I like to call it, at a voter service or polling center. But the sort of earliest that I noticed among the 50 states, hey, didn't look at DC, okay, was October 4th. So let's just keep that number in mind, October 4th. Another delightful state, Montana. You can register same day as election day. Why isn't it like that in every state? Oh my gosh.
Do you want to know why?
do you know why? I mean, I know why because of the structure of our country, but is there more?
I mean, it's not in everyone's interest to make voting easy. I think that's the
right,
simple
right,
answer.
Right, right. There's that. All right. Well, you know what? We're going to take care of that. We just got to win some elections first.
A lot of them.
Let's just focus on winning, and then we'll do that part, and then we'll do also D.C. could be a state, and then we got a long list. Oh, and the climate. Okay. now, I like to end the show by asking what makes you feel hopeful, in this kind of like we're all in the muck right now, but there are things that are making us feel hopeful. It could be small or large. It could be ameliorate, or it could be, a Kamala Harris speech. Whatever it is, what is making you feel hopeful? Who wants to go first?
I got one. I'll go first. Margaret, you go next. It's easy. I mean, this summer, thinking about the summer, which is now coming to an end very soon, I mean, it's easy to think about the amount of people, families, children, young people, older people who wanted to get in the streets and say, enough is enough. That's a beautiful thing at any time, especially during a global pandemic. But I also, because I've talked about that, we've all heard enough about that or plenty about that to go around. I also just want to shout out to Bill and Ted 3 Face the Music, because my gosh, is the ending of that movie, the conclusion to the trilogy, hopeful AF. And it brought tears to my eyes.
Oh my
and
God.
It's similarly, though differently, about coming together in the streets to celebrate life, and it's surprising how it comes around.
God, I want to see it.
You should see it. Support it. You know, these two dudes wanted to make a movie that had a positive message, and no one wanted to make it for like decades. But they persisted and they got it made. It's kind of amazing. That's all.
All right. I love that. Margaret, what do you got?
I'm hopeful that I think that that it's true that we're really looking to a more of a conscious time where that people are really looking and seeing that we have been in this racist system for such a long time, this racist country for such a long time. And we're waking up to a new reality where I think that things are going to change permanently. And I know that I'm going to be committed to that for the rest of my life anyway. And so I think we're going to be permanently altered as a society after this experience. I believe that. So that makes me hopeful.
Yes. All altered, and then glorious things will come.
Yes.
I love that. And I'm hopeful. There are two little things that made me, two little things that made me hopeful this week. One was that I heard a song by Tyler, the Creator, and one of the lyrics in the song was, "Do you look both ways when you cross my mind?" And I just thought, that was the cutest, most lovely fucking lyric. And I just played that song over and over. So anyways, Tyler, the Creator. And then I also saw on a jog along the East River in New York City, the East River Alliance had a ton of people volunteering to clean up the debris that kind of gets like wrapped up in the rocks that are along the river. And it was like Gen Z, like it was like 18-year-olds that were like cleaning up debris from them. And I was like, oh, we're gonna be fine. Look at these youngins volunteering to fucking clean up debris in the East River. I love them so much. And they will do great, wonderful things. And they will do it as the rest of us also do great, wonderful things. So that made me feel really hopeful. But what I really want to do is tell the folks of Fake the Nation where to find you and all the wonderful things you do. Sean, where do they find you?
I'm on the things at Ramasferum. It's my last name, but check out the show Today Explained. We do the news in a way that doesn't make you want to jump off a bridge.
Margaret, where do they find you?
At Margaret Cho on Twitter, at Margaret_Cho on Insta, and I have The Margaret Cho on Aereos. It's a podcast that I do. It comes out on Tuesdays, and everywhere you listen to podcasts.
And can I say that I did a little re-listen of one of your albums? I can't remember which one, and you had a joke, and I think about this joke a lot because the joke was something like Asian people, they don't age. They just, the bill on their visor gets longer.
Oh yeah.
I probably butchered that, but it
no,
was.
No, it's right. That's right. That's good.
And I have to like make an admission to you, which is that I love a visor in the summertime.
Yeah, it's good. It's good.
It's so useful in stopping the sun from getting into that one space between my sunglasses and my face.
You know? It's perfect. Now I have one that goes all the way down, so it's like very like, I'm like a welder.
Yeah, it's great for the aerosols, right? In the pandemic times.
Yeah, it's perfect. Right, totally protected.
Oh
yes.
My God. That's like the height of visor right there.
I love it.
So anyways, I just want you to know that I feel close to your people and may one day claim that I'm one of them because of the visors.
Yes.
I'm kidding. All right, but what I really want to do is make sure that we recognize the wonderful people that make this show happen. There are so many. I want to thank our producer, Anita Flores, our talented audio engineer, Andy Christens, Gabby Alter wrote our theme music, Lily Fleschel helps out with research, and listeners, we love hearing from you, so send us your feedback, topics we should be chatting about, guest ideas you might have. Leave us a voicemail at 331-901-0005 or drop us a line at comments@fakethenation.com. And if you like what you hear, please favorite Fake the Nation on Stitcher, follow us on Spotify, subscribe on Apple Podcasts. So many directives of what you could do and how you can click. And leave us a review on Apple Podcasts because it helps more people find the show, and really just like tell everybody that you listen to the show in a like a verbal way. That is the end of the show. We'll be back next week.